What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin. Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome to Cavs a Podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with Elijah Kim and Chris Francis. And we are riding a two-game winning streak. Am I right, gentlemen?
Three.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because Eli brought – what was the win before the
– Bulls.
Bulls, that's right. Yeah. New Year's Eve, the third, and then today. And today's game – and we'll get back and talk about the Bulls a little bit. But today's game was definitely an ugly win. If you look up ugly wins in the dictionary, there's a picture of this game. The Cavs shot 39% from the field. So did the Suns, and 35% for the Suns from three, or 36, and then the Cavs 31% from three. It was ugly. And
the Cavs got out-rebounded and out-assisted. So
yeah, like how did they win the game?
Yeah, they really
they even had more turnovers too.
So yeah, I mean it was just clutch. It was clutch plays.
And a couple free throws.
Yeah.
So, but the big heroes tonight, obviously, Caris LeVert led the team in scoring, gave him a big spark in the second half when he had 21 points and six rebounds, not in the second half, but overall, 5 of 7 from three. Really the only guy who could was shooting well tonight from deep, and they really needed him when he got going in the third. And then, of course, Donovan Mitchell started turning it on a bit late, hit a big three. Had a big assist down the stretch to finish with 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 9 assists. And then
how about that play to Mobley?
Yeah, and then the game-winning assist, Evan Mobley was, 1 for 8 at that point?
At that point.
Donovan drove in, had two guys on him. Mobley cut behind him. Donovan found him, and he hit kind of a drifting 14-footer. But his focus there for that shot was, I thought, really commendable.
It was picture perfect.
Yeah. But you could tell he was locked in.
Yeah.
And hit a game-winning shot to finish with 6 points. And, of course, the other guy that I got to give a big shout out to is our boy Raul Neto. Raul Neto, that's Agenda.
Right. Yes, sir.
We've been banging the drum. And he had a
JB,
huge three
quarter. Do you like
quarter.
What you see?
Are you not amused? Big third quarter. JB, take us through that third quarter and credit JB there.
Yeah, Chris. Well, I mean, I'll give him credit. He's finally found a consistent, 10 to 15 for Neto. He got 21 tonight because he was cooking. And so also credit to JB for stretching his minutes out. While he had the hot hand, he kept him in there. I think he brought him into the fourth quarter too, if I'm not mistaken.
He did,
Neto played a huge stretch and basically saved the game. I mean, they were struggling. And then all of a sudden, he provided a scoring spark basically at the end of the third quarter. Kind of got other guys going. Donovan Mitchell found him. Like that's how odd the game was that Donovan Mitchell was like looking to get Raul Neto buckets.
They were running pick and roll with Raul Neto as the roll man. And it was working. Sure. They got two buckets off it.
Yeah.
And he was finishing over guys like Bridges and Ayton inside. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. It was wild.
It was a bizarre game. He stole an inbound. I thought him stealing that inbounds play was kind of the play that kind of got the whole team going. Like, it's a good steal on the inbounds when you fool the cameraman. Like, the cameraman was like, oh, got to backtrack. Go back. Check out Raul.
That's right.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was very unexpected. Well, that's definitely for sure. And he led the team in plus minus with 14. And then you had Chetty Osman. Just another, not a good shooting night, but plus, Raul led the bench scorers with 14. And then Chetty Osman led the team with plus 11 off the bench on 4-12 shooting, but really just a lot of energy. Really timely plays once again in an ugly game that they won. So
credit to JB for running him 33 minutes.
Yeah.
Giving him starter level minutes off the bench, thankfully. Cut Stevens minutes down to 6.
Stevens looks like I didn't get to watch the first half, but Stevens looks like he was terrible. Like -7 in 6 minutes is not good.
The stretch that he played, they were not good. And then, limiting Okoro to 19 minutes was, keeping him in the sweet spot right there, not too much, not too little. So,
I thought Okoro had some nice plays. He had that really nice assist to Donovan Mitchell.
Had a couple rebounds. Yeah. 4 rebounds. That's not bad in 19 minutes.
So. Nope, and plus 5. Can't argue with that. Kevin Love struggled a lot tonight. Definitely.
Find the bottom of
well, I think it's, the extended minutes in that overtime game against the Bulls on Monday.
Games. Yeah, for sure.
It's just that he is not that guy anymore. And I thought the
Where's
minutes he
started
gave...
beating the drum for Isaiah Mobley. that's what's holding the team back right now. JB, come on, man, come on.
Well,
play.
It sounds
play.
Like he's the guy that they kind of elevated over Diakite at this point.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense to me because Mobley has better court awareness.
He's a more fundamentally Diakite. Sound player.
Yeah, exactly. So, but then freaking use him.
And he's been lighting it up in the G League. He was part of the All Showcase team.
Put the brothers in.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's see the brothers. Come on. The brothers, Mobleys.
So
I was going to say Kasparov or whatever the hell that was, but.
Who? What? Oh, the brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. But I was thinking, how do I make it about Mobley?
Well, we've already had the brothers Lopez and the brothers Zeller and the brothers Morris.
That's so, true. Oh, yeah. So
of course, the brothers Ball.
It's time. Yeah, you're right.
We need to bust out the Mobleys. There
what
we
do
go.
You think, Eli? Let's bust out the Mobleys.
I'd be down for it, man. I think. It's really funny because in the Korean Cavs chat, they love the Mobley brothers and they want to see the brothers play together. So
is that like a West Coast thing? That's is that because I know there's a lot of Korean USC fans.
I don't think so. I think it's just genuinely they think it's cool that two brothers can be on the same NBA team.
Nice.
Yeah, they understand the think about the familial connection they have. They should be able to tap into a level of basketball that, you know, is above, you know, like levels above, you know, who normally plays. You know what I mean? I feel like they can make some magic. Come on. I mean, they've been playing their whole lives together.
You can't argue with it. I mean, we've seen the Morris brothers.
Yeah,
I think my favorite bit on the Morris brothers is which one's the dumb one, and it's whatever one is on the floor right then. Wow. That was my favorite evil genius bit. he always used to do that, but
got his ass.
I mean, it was an interesting game because I thought that for three quarters, especially Ayton, really dominated him inside. You know, 18 rebounds, really controlled the boards. You know, Chris Paul was very difficult to handle, 25 points, 8 assists, and the Cavs just kind of kept on him, tried to keep him from getting to his right hand. I think the place they really shone as a team was Holden Mikal Bridges, who's kind of their second scorer right now. Held him to 3 of 15 from the field, which was a big reason they lost. Bridges had the shot to tie it at the end and just missed, right? Like he had a semi-open look and but they made him take a tough one and he missed it. And the Cavs just kind of executed better down the stretch. Just
yeah, I mean, that's what
one play better, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it came down to is the two plays I'm thinking about is the Karis three to tie it. And then the play that Donovan made, it was a pass to Mobley to win it. So like, that's the thing is they did championship things tonight, even though they sucked for the whole entirety of the game, but they just like it, when it came to the most pressured moment in the game, they came through.
I mean, so, they scored 33 points in the first half. It was like it was a WNBA. Dude. It was a bad WNBA score.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not lying.
NBA like that? You're gonna knock
it? No, WNBA I'm saying it's a bad WNBA score.
Wow.
It was pretty brutal. It was like a high school game.
Yeah, it did look like a high school game, and I actually had to run a couple errands and I kind of caught the first 5 minutes and I was like, this is a slog. I'm gonna come back at halftime. And I'm glad I did because when I looked up and it was 33 points, I was like, oof, this is brutal. And it wasn't what they scored 40. They were up four. It was 43-33. I mean, it really was a high school score. So. Anything else stand out from this game in terms of the Suns? The Suns look kind of dead in the water right now without Booker to me. Like if you can't win a game where you hold a team to 33 points in the first half, you're in trouble.
I also think it's just had insult to injury. They lost Campaign tonight. So it's
So, yeah, he didn't come back in the second half, right?
Correct. His foot. He had a foot problem.
Wow. I mean, they're screwed. I mean, yeah, like they should be tanking. That's what they should be doing.
They should be scraping the G League or something. But, that's the thing. Like, do you think if Booker's out for an extended period of time, do you think they look to move Chris Paul?
To the Lakers?
Oh, I don't know. Anywhere. I mean, he doesn't.
See it. No, yeah. Who would want to trade him? Who would want to trade for him?
Well, that's true.
Like, the Lakers?
Well, that's also true. Oh my God, that'd be so funny to watch. I don't think that LeBron and Chris Paul would play that well together. They both want the ball in their hands.
Well, no, I think actually LeBron's starting to change the way he plays because he's getting older.
So he's off the ball more?
Yep, I think he's off the ball more. I think he's letting other guys initiate offense and allowing him to like make decisions, you know, or just get easy shots, basically. You know, he gets a ton of easy shots that way and he makes them. So how much is he averaging? Like, he's averaging like 27 points a game.
Yeah, know? No, I mean, and he turned 38 and
yeah,
just like had a couple 49s in a row.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he's starting to morph his game a little bit. It's interesting. I was wondering, no, because I think that's a big question. Like, can he morph his game to last longer? You know, does he have the humility inside as a basketball player to, you know, change his game, you know, to suit his aging, you know, and apparently he might, you know, so.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what he's doing at 38. But I would have a hard time thinking that a Chris Paul and LeBron team, but who knows?
Maybe they would do nothing. Oh, yeah, they would do nothing. Come on. No, they're too old. Like, can they even make it through the season is the question.
Well, that is the question, especially when you've also got Anthony hurt every year Davis.
Yeah, he's done, so, right?
For the year? No, I don't think he's done for the year.
I mean, he's done for a while.
Yeah, he is done for a while. And can the Lakers stay close enough to the pack to be able to make a run?
Are they even in the play-in right now?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think they might be in the play-in. They might be the 10. We could look this up.
They're not.
I am
not
looking.
Even in the
play. They're 12th.
Oh, wow.
2.5 games out of 10.
They should be tanking. What are they doing? Yeah.
Well, the West is so weird right now because, you know, Golden State is 8th. They're the most trick-or-treat team in the league.
They're 7th.
Oh, I've got them 8th right now, but yeah.
Five-game win streak right now, and they're doing it without Steph.
Yeah, but they're so trick-or-treat. Like, their wins versus their losses are just brutal. But
well, they can't win on the road. They're on the road, they're 3-16.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is, you know, the West is Denver, Memphis, and New Orleans up at the top. And you look at those three teams, and it's hard to think that the Golden States and the Lakers and the Suns of the world can compete with, you know, Jokic and Zion and, you know, Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr. So it's a weird division out West. And then, of course, the East, I think we're going to talk about a little bit when we get back. But the East is it's a little more top heavy, but it's definitely weird as well. So, and with that, we'll be right back.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Chris Francis and Eli Kim. We have an official sponsor of Cavs the Podcast tonight, and that is Costco brand, Kirkland brand spiced rum. where you can get a 1.75 liter bottle of rum at 90 proof for $13. It's like the best alcohol value in America. So
wow.
And it's not too shabby. It's pretty good. So
no, I would buy Kirkland everything if I could. I'm pro Costco. I'm a pro Costco advocate agenda, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I mean, you know, their vodka is Grey Goose. So
is it?
Yeah, their vodka is Grey Goose. Yeah. Yes.
No way.
Yes, way.
I don't believe that.
That is the if you do the searches on the internet, that is the story.
I'm going to. There's going to be hot Googling action.
Yeah, so it's hard to beat the price on booze from the old Costco. So just a little tip for all you cash short drinkers there. Anyway, with that devolvement into degeneracy, we'll get back and we'll talk about the East a little bit, which is very, very compact. Up at the top, we've got about top four teams. There's about 1.5 games separating them. You got Boston up front, who's lost a couple. You got Boston gave up 150 points to the Thunder last night, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got Brooklyn, who is 9-1 in their last 10. You got Milwaukee, who just eked one out in Toronto tonight after blowing an over 10-point lead with 2 minutes left. And then you got Cleveland sitting there, three-game win streak at 25-14. And then you got Philly and New York rounding it out. I mean, the top seven of the East is pretty legit, I would say, or at least the top five. You know, the Knicks are kind of 3 games back of Philly. I feel like the top five of the East is really solid.
Yeah, I think that's the real story there, is that the top five is basically, they're basically all a crapshoot for the Eastern Conference Finals. You know what I mean? Basically, that's what I think is.
It's going to be
those four teams in the second round. Four of the five teams in the second round.
It's going to be a weird seeding because, like, actually, I think if Boston stays number one, it might benefit the Cavs to stay at four, because I feel like they match Boston better than they match Brooklyn or Milwaukee. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I'd honestly rather see Milwaukee. I think they match up best with them.
Interesting. What about you, Eli? Who would you, if the playoffs started right now, who would you want in, let's say, the first round or the second round? Let's say the second round.
I think it'd be Boston, too, just because mentally I think the Cavs have beaten them twice and they think they could probably beat them in a series. So,
And I feel like the Cavs have the advantage at the big man spot, whereas, you know, Robert Williams isn't back yet. Maybe when he comes back, that will change. But right now, I feel like that Cavs have that advantage. So, and then kind of rounding out the top 10 is the Bulls, who the Cavs took two from the hard way. And then, of course, Monday's
game.
They
just beat the Nets.
Yeah, they just beat the Nets. and maybe the NBA gave them some officiating help. I don't know, but Monday's game, I would say, is going to go down as one of the greatest Cavs games, regular season Cavs games of all time. Would you guys agree?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Easy. And Eli, where were you sitting for that game?
I was not too far away from the action. Was pretty good. A lot of guys from Columbus were going up. So, you know, had to go watch. I actually felt pretty bad because I thought it was going to be a blowout for about half the game. So
for the Cavs or for the Bulls?
For the Cavs. I mean, it was brutal in the first half. So
yeah,
I was like, man, do we just count our losses and be glad we had some good Chinese food before you came? But well,
you got one of the great performances, if not the best regular season performance in Cavalier history. I think it'd be hard to find one to top what Donovan Mitchell did Monday.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I mean, it's a top eight performance scoring wise of all time in the history of the NBA. So,
and it is, I believe, number two in terms of a player with 71 points and 11 assists. No player was responsible for more points in a regular season game than Mitchell since Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You guys are underselling this. This is the greatest modern offensive performance in NBA history.
Whoa.
I mean, it's the only one that matters. That's a
strong high praise.
It's the only one that matters. I mean, like, Will Chamberlain doesn't exist.
You know? No, I mean, it was incredible. And kind of, Eli, take us through the vibe of just watching that game as it kind of progressed. And, you know, I know Mitchell started to heat up in the third quarter. And, like, when did you get the feeling that, oh, my God, we're watching something special here?
I mean, honestly, looking back at it, you know, Mitchell only scored 16 points in the first half. And
only 16? I thought he had more than that in the first half.
No, 16.
Just 16. And then just 55. Quote unquote 16.
Yeah, and then he ended up with 55 in the second half in overtime. But I think it really started in the third quarter when he was making a couple threes, and then, you know, the lead shrank from 21 to 19 and then down to 16 and then down to 13. And then you kind of are just sitting there and you're just like, man, if they could really cut this to like 10 to 13, I think Mitchell's just so hot. And I think a lot of people were worried that they're going to take him out of the fourth to start just because he was so gassed. He played the whole third quarter. But he basically played the whole second half and overtime.
Well, he asked it. Actually, supposedly the reporting said he asked in.
Yeah. So
he wanted to stay in. So it was his call. Like, thank God JB listened.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I think the there's a couple like plays that kind of get lost. Everyone remembers the free throw. Everyone's going to remember that first three-pointer in overtime to kind of cement the win, because it just felt like the Bulls were, you know, so dead in the water after that free throw. But I think the play where he leaked out in transition in overtime was like the epitome of the game for me, where he played the most minutes of the game at that point, and he still had the energy to just blow by LaVine and DeRozan for that layup.
Yeah, I mean, just like he was shot out of a cannon, and they didn't even realize what was happening until it was over.
Yep.
Like, yep. And that was really the nail in the coffin for the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think at some point in the third quarter when he made a three to, you know, get it down to single digits, that's when the belief was there. But I also think kind of that four-point play he got on Caruso was where some people are like, all right, hang on.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that was a play. Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, like, why don't the Cavs just score 4 points every possession? Exactly. But, yeah, that four-point play was huge. And then, you know, he had I'm going through the scoring right now. He had a putback at, like, 5 minutes. Then he had a pull-up J at, like, 2:52. And then the step back at 1:30 and I think that tied it, but I'm not 100% sure. And then I don't even want to get into the free throw line play, but I will. It was one of the most remarkable plays I've ever seen on an NBA court. Like, it was just the way he had. So did you see the bit that he and Robin Lopez had practiced that, and he actually requested Robin Lopez get put in for that play?
No, I didn't hear that.
I did not, but it makes sense. I mean, you want to have as many big bodies as you can, right, to muck it up.
Right, and the whole thing was he kind of timed exactly how to hit that shot off the back right iron and kind of knew exactly where it was going to come down, and he hit it perfectly for what he did. And then, you know, Lopez boxed out, gave him the lane, and I'm not going to get into the quote-unquote lane violation conspiracy theory. I think maybe after the next break we'll get into that, but he placed it exactly where he was going to be to get that ball, and that just made a ridiculously good play just to put that in the basket because he was kind of falling down. And I don't know, when I first saw the play, it almost looked like it bounced off his head and into the basket, but that's not what happened, and it was really hard to see from the camera angle of the broadcast in real time. You just saw the basket go in. Like, did you get a clear view of what had happened when you were in the building, Eli? Like, was he on your side or the far side?
No, it was the opposite side.
Okay.
From the friends. Yeah. So,
I mean, you saw the ball go in, but you kind of didn't see how it went in, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, it was, I probably had like the friends, we probably had the worst angle because we're like on the other side of the basket and the other corner of the action, right? So it's like literally the furthest from it. And I thought like Robin or Kevin Love like tipped it in at first.
Yeah, it was super weird because it looked almost like it went off his head because it dropped so fast and then went right back up. But that was also, he jumped and put it in. It was like the old tip play in 33. Like, you guys ever played 33? Have you played 21?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so 33 is the Northeast Ohio version of 21. You just play the 33 instead of 21. So, and you ever play tips where if you tip the ball, the guy gets reset back to zero? That was that old play. Like, he jumped up, tipped the ball in, and reset the Bulls back to zero. it was wild. Like, it was almost reminded me, like, not the actual play, but just kind of the way that every single thing had to go right for it to work out the way it did, of the DeAndre Ayton's Suns play in the bubble, where they did the play with like point so many seconds left and he slammed it in right off the inbound. You remember that?
Yeah, I mean, it just looked like that was actually, there was another play too where, ironically, like the Jazz game that night too, where the buzzer beater, I don't know, for some reason it just looked like one of those buzzer beater plays that looked too good and you're just hoping that it still stayed for whatever reason. Obviously, in this case, for the lane violation, you're just like, hope they don't call it.
Exactly.
But just, you know, it feels like one of those moments where like it looks good, it looks like it was perfectly executed, and you just got to pray that they don't blow a late whistle or.
Yeah, exactly. And that the Cavs hold on in overtime. But when he hit that first three in overtime, you kind of knew that was it, right? Like, you kind of knew they had it. Did you feel that? Was that the vibe in the arena?
Oh, yeah. I think as soon as he went down and hit that step, I mean, it was like a step back three, too. It wasn't like a catch and shoot shot. So as soon
no,
as
absolutely. It was.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that was the cool thing about the overtime was, you know, he hits that, then he hits another shot, and then kind of to ice the game with about a minute 50 left, he hit another step back three. And that's when you were like, holy cow, like, he's got a shot, because I think he had, what, 59 or 58 going into overtime?
Yeah, I think it was 58 to have the franchise record.
Yeah.
I think I'll be honest, I was a little frustrated because everyone in the arena knew he had the franchise record, but obviously they wanted him to break 60 ASAP. And then once you hit like two threes in a row to get to 64, you're like, all right, well, he just needs like 6 more points to 70. And you're just sitting there, and then
but you're also like, okay, win the game though.
Yeah, and then I guess the frustrating thing was
right after he makes the second three, LeVert takes a three. You're like, what are you doing, man? Like, the like Donovan Mitchell literally just scored like the last 10 points of the game. So yeah, I mean, it was definitely electric. I think the vibes are immaculate, as the Cavs say themselves about the team. And I'm just glad that they were able to come back, especially when they had no reason to win that game or even tonight's game, to be frank. I mean,
yeah.
And I think it just proves that Donovan Mitchell is that guy. And I'm just,
yeah,
let's
relitigate the trade again.
Okay. We're at the second break time. So when we come back, we've got a couple of bones of contention litigating the trade. And then I want to talk about the free throw, the quote unquote lane violate 2-minute report. So with that, we'll be right back.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Cavs, the People's Court, where Judge Nate listens to plaintiffs Eli Kim and Chris Francis and relitigates past and future hypothetical trades. and starting out as our plaintiff, Chris Francis, who wants to relitigate the, as I was calling it for a hot minute, the Lauri Markkanen trade, but it's really the Donovan Mitchell trade. What do you want to talk about that? You know I'm messing. You know I'm just messing.
Oh, man. Shout out to friend of the pod, Trill Bro Dude of the You Know Ball podcast. But he put forth the argument that there's only so many guys that are that actually matter in the NBA, you know, in any given
I agree
year,
with you.
In any given season. And Donovan Mitchell's one of those guys. And he's one of those guys that can bring you a championship. And, you know, that's why you do the trade. And basically, I mean, his argument, and I have to agree, is that Danny Ainge got fleeced. Plain and simple. He got fleeced.
So
the fleecing.
I kind of do want to – I've gone so much back and forth on that. I actually think Lauri Markkanen has been really great for them. I think he is a really good secondary or tertiary scorer whose strengths are being highlighted because they are basically – he's the one or two scorer every night along with Jordan Clarkson. But he's not – I'm not sure that's sustainable in the playoffs for him because he does rely on other people to set up his shot. And although he is – the funny thing is I think Eli, you and I talked about this last podcast. He would kind of be the perfect three for the Cavs right now. But what did they give up? They gave up Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, 3 first-round picks, 2 swaps for – basically only Donovan Mitchell, right? There was nothing else in that trade. Am I correct, Chris?
I think so. Yeah.
That's correct. Agbaji too, though.
And Agbaji, who I will be forever convinced he drafted just because he knew Ainge wanted him. Because there's no I don't think Kobe is a bad enough GM to draft Agbaji without that trade in mind. And I tell you who looks like fools right now is the Knicks. Would you agree, Chris?
Oh, I mean, of course. I mean, that's the whole thing is that in retrospect, I guess Ainge won in the sense that the Cavs trade package was absolutely better than the Knicks package because, like, the signature piece of the Knicks package was RJ Barrett.
Yeah.
And Grimes.
And so, they didn't want to give up RJ Barrett. That was the sticking
right.
point.
right. And Grimes, I think, was the
other. Yeah, Quentin Grimes.
Yeah, Quentin Grimes. And so, yeah, I mean, so Ainge did get one over on the Knicks, but at the end of the day, what happens with these trades is always the same thing, is that the team that got the best player won the trade. And that's the rule. And I think it applies in the Cavs situation, you know, because those picks are going to be, two out of the three picks are guaranteed to be worthless.
Yeah, well, that is like true.
Something has to happen to Darius Garland or Evan Mobley for two of those picks to even matter.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, even it's really five picks because of the swaps. But no, I'm with you. And I think the thing about Donovan Mitchell that has impressed me so much is what a composed person he is, how fantastic he is in front of the camera, what a leader he is. He's absolutely a guy you would 100% want representing your franchise. Like, to me, if you were to pick a face of the next generation of the NBA's superstars, it's like him and Booker, and, you know, Giannis kind of bridges that gap. But, you know, when the LeBrons and the KDs and the Stephs start fading, Donovan Mitchell's going to be that guy. And I could see him being the face of the NBA. Like, he's going to have as many endorsement opportunities as he wants. Like,
he already has his own shoe.
He already has his own shoe. And, you know, he's a good looking guy. He's extremely intelligent when he speaks and just charismatic. And, like,
look out, Nate's wife.
Oh, she's in love. Like, here's the thing about Donovan Mitchell. Like, so my wife has three favorite guys on the Cavs right now. Kevin Love, obviously.
I meant you wanted to date him.
I get surrogacy benefits. Like, she watches the Cavs and then takes it out on me. That's what I'm saying. I'm only kidding. This is pure a joke about a character named Nate who lives in West Michigan. Anyway. So what I'm saying is, she has three guys. Kevin Love, obviously. Donovan Mitchell, who she just, like, he is just the nicest person. Oh my gosh, he's so good looking, and he's so good, and he's so smart. And then she goes, who is that? Raul Neto. She loves Raul Neto. And she calls him. That's why I always put the gif up when he scores of, like, Nito. So, but I mean, the biggest thing for me is my wife will keep watching the Cavs with me, even if Kevin Love isn't there. And that is the greatest gift that Donovan Mitchell has given me, other than 71 points the other night.
Wow.
Now, did you just find out far too much information about my marriage? But and I have a bit of a crush on him, so I mean, whatever.
you finally admitted it.
That's, I mean, she's on both of our hall pass list, so
there you go.
Or he is. Oh my god. It's like him and who's the girl that plays for the Liberty? Or not the Liberty, the Chicago Sky.
Candace Parker,
like her and him and Candace Parker are the two that are on both, and Padma Lakshmi is the two that are on both, the three that are on both our lists. So.
Wow, there you go.
Anyway.
I feel like
You've just learned far too much.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, where we were, no, I agree with you. There are maybe 10 guys who matter in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah, I mean, who can? How many guys do you think can take you to a championship game?
Like, let's name them. So we've got Luka, I think, is on that list, probably in the lead for MVP right now. Kevin Durant.
Yep.
Would you put Tatum on that list? I would.
Yep.
You got Jokic. Giannis, yeah, obviously.
Jokic,
Donovan Mitchell.
There you go.
I feel like that's the list. Maybe, well,
Do
LeBron.
We say Booker?
Well, I'd say
Booker.
I would not say Booker.
Yeah.
But I would say LeBron and
I think
Steph.
LeBron's outside that, but yeah. Well, yeah.
You got to say Steph they're just borderline. Because they literally just did it.
Just won, yeah.
And he's a guy that at this point in his career, he's literally saving himself for the playoffs every season.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
And it's about fringe. 9-10 guys there.
Yeah, that's the fringe, though.
And maybe Booker on the outside, but I don't think he has a team for it this year.
Yeah.
And the other guy that's maybe in that conversation, just given the numbers he's putting up, but he's never done it in the playoffs, is SGA. And then the other guy on the outside of that is Embiid.
Yeah, I'd say Embiid's on the outside. I'd say Kawhi is also on.
Well, Kawhi was there, but he hasn't proved he's healthy enough to be there again.
Exactly. So
yeah, and then the other guy is the guy that we haven't seen yet, and that's Zion.
There you go. Yeah, so I mean that list is
a dozen-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and Donovan's up there. So I mean that's
And Donovan may be the best pure guard of all those players.
I would agree. I mean, I think he's. I mean, like they were talking about his stats, like right now. I'm not sure if Eli heard the same thing, but like basically, he's putting up Steph stats at this point, like prime Steph stats. That's how ridiculous.
Except better around the basket, and
I'm sure
better rebounder and defender. I mean, Steph was always a good system defender, but Donovan can get up and block a shot. You know, Donovan can hold at the point of the attack better than Steph always did. I think, anyway. I don't know. Any arguments there, Eli? You've been awfully quiet.
No, I mean, I think this year Donovan Mitchell is definitely proving that he's a top 10 player, without a doubt. I think he was closer in Utah than people want to give him credit for, and I think this season just proves that it was more, it was like, you know, a lot of people want it to be 50-50 with Rudy Gobert, I think. And
that just looks so fraudulent.
And that looks so fraudulent.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I think, you know, I love Donovan Mitchell. I think he's been great. I think the thing I love more about than the basketball is just how he's embraced, like, the whole team, and he's willing to be the leader of the team, and it seems like he genuinely is happy in the situation in Cleveland. So
yeah, the vibes are immaculate, as you said.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, obviously I think the part that's kind of sad is, as great as everything is now, the playoffs are kind of the only thing that really matters for him at this point. That's how
that's true.
That proves how good of a player he is, right? Like, he's done everything he could possibly do in a regular season, including the Bulls game, like scoring 71 points. So, like, honestly, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Like, yeah, he's that great and elite, and sadly, all that really matters is the playoff success or lack thereof, right? So,
well, the good news is the in-season tournament is coming next year, so he's got two chances to you know. No,
I don't think so.
I feel like the in-season tournament's going to be such bullshit that it's going to be like the Maui Invitational
of
the NBA
next year,
next season. Yeah,
no way.
The NBA's version of the Maui Invitational is coming next year.
Oh my god! Adam Silver for prison. Good god! What the hell is wrong with him?
Yeah. And I do want to talk about the state of the league a little bit, but also we do have to talk about the Cavs and kind of what the implications of Donovan Mitchell being really, I would say, a top six or seven player are, what those implications are, and kind of what it means for the Cavs. And when we come back, we'll talk about that a little bit more. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith here with Eli Kim and Chris Francis. And we're just kind of gushing over Donovan Mitchell and what he means for the Cavs. And one of the things I want to talk about is something that I talked about a little bit on the last podcast. If Donovan Mitchell is this good, is there anybody on the team besides Donovan Mitchell that should be considered untouchable in the pursuit of a championship?
Ooh.
Like, I feel like, I mean, Donovan, let me finish my thesis and then you guys can riff. I feel like Donovan Mitchell is so good that any year you are not directly competing for a championship could be a wasted year. So, you know, not discuss.
Yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, all the same, DG and Mobley are untouchable in that instance. They're your future all-stars that you could build a dynasty with. You know what I mean? That's the way I would hope Donovan Mitchell's approaching the Cleveland situation. I think, to me, if I was Donovan Mitchell, I'm approaching the Cavaliers situation like, here's my chance to actually, like, author a dynasty and put my name in the history books of basketball. That's what I'm thinking the opportunity Cleveland provides, because it's true, because it's, you know, you've got a 21-year-old all-star, a 23-year-old all-star. You have a 19 to 20-year-old rookie of the year candidate who you expect to be a Hall of Fame player, you know, and transcendent talent, you know, is the ideal situation for Donovan Mitchell to, like, you know, like, rip off a run of, like, hell, you know, it's possible they could rip off a run of, like, four or five championships, you know?
If they wanted to stick together.
I'm just saying, like, there's an obvious path there forward. You know, you got years and years of Mobley and Garland, you know, like, to me, if I was Mitchell, I'd be like, holy, you know, I just landed on the golden goose right here. You know, I just ride this baby out till I'm, you know, in my mid 30s or whatever and see what I could do. I mean, he's only 26.
So the counterpoint to that argument is, because you don't ever know how long you have as an athlete, do you make moves to win now and, you know, push out past, you know, that might hurt you in 2 or 3 years? Like, is that a legit thing that you consider? Or you just say, no, the future is too sacrosanct here. You've got to just keep rolling with what you're building and let it grow organically, even if you're not.
Well, I think it's not about winning now or I'm not sure. I guess there's a balance to it, but to me, it's like, what's the ceiling? You know, what's going to cap your ceiling
and judge
things that way? And to me, what's capping the ceiling it will always be the offensively limited players, right?
Interesting.
So that's what's capping our ceiling is.
Right, oh, for now, sure.
You know, we're even with two all-star guards playing at an all-star level, you know, we've got a average offense or just like an above average offense. And it's mainly because we can't get other guys going consistently enough. So, you know, the question is, do you want to sacrifice the best defense in the league for some offense?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Eli, I see you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I think maybe this is a hot take, but I would actually kind of agree with what you're alluding to, Nate. I think you do have another untouchable, but it's actually just Mobley. And my reasoning is that I just think history is not kind to teams that are supremely guard centric, especially if they're not like a big guard, in the postseason. So maybe the Cavs are good enough to break through that stereotype, but I would be open to consider, you know, it has to be for the right player, of course. You're not going to give away Garland or Jared Allen to make a, you know, seemingly lateral move or worse move. But I think you have to look at it and be willing to go all in if you have to.
It is. So the one thing I feel like it's, I but think if there's
answer, a... Hold on. He didn't even say for who. So who you
trading? Oh, he's Garland. That's who he's trading.
For who?
Well, that's, you know, it's... Wait, here's the thing on Garland. You can't
that's
trade him
That's what I'm saying
year.
Is if you can't...
But you can't trade
answer,
him this year. You, it can't be can't, till next summer.
If you can't come up with an answer for who to trade Garland for, then... What the, like, why the hell are we even talking about this? You know what I mean? Like, you can't even come up with an answer for who to trade for. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
Oh, okay. So I'm gonna give a caveat here.
I want names.
But here's the thing, you can't trade for anybody right now.
You have to wait till next year anyway.
You have to wait till the summer at a minimum because the base year compensation and the poison pill provision makes it almost impossible to trade Garland
excuses.
This season.
I'm hearing excuses.
But,
I haven't heard.
But I will give you names in just a minute.
There we go.
What are your names, Eli? Who would you think about? Paul George?
I mean, we talked about this, I think, in our chat.
Yeah, we talked last podcast.
Yeah, and I think the player that could make sense is like Brandon Ingram. I mean, that's probably the worst player that I would maybe. I mean, I wouldn't say that's a for sure win, but
the problem with Brandon Ingram is I don't think the Pelicans ever do that because who's there? McCollum and Garland make no sense at all. They're both too small.
They'd run into the same problem the Cavs might be having, right?
Well, I feel like the Cavs can kind of get away with it a little bit because Mitchell's athletic enough that he plays bigger than his height, but McCollum's never been a good defender. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree.
So that kind of takes, I mean, at least for a couple years until McCollum kind of ages out, it takes Ingram off the table. So, you know, in the words of Chris Francis, who else you got?
Another name is Franz Wagner.
I find that very intriguing.
But it had to be for more than Franz at this point, right? Because I think Garland is a much more accomplished player. But that'd be a huge risk. You're expecting Wagner to continue to improve. And he kind of solves a lot of the problems of that small, instead of having a small backcourt, you know, you solidify a wing. You have a good, decent playmaker starting with Mitchell, and he's young as well. So you can kind of keep building. Like the timeline doesn't have to accelerate with Wagner, because if you trade for like Paul George, it definitely accelerates. If you somehow get Middleton in a sign and trade, your timeline still accelerates, you know? So. That's why I think it's very intriguing, but I don't think either team is probably that interested realistically, especially the Magic, because they have such a good young core as well. They're probably not looking to blow it up anytime soon.
But I would say that there's a little bit of overlap with the number of bigs they have or tall threes with Bol Bol and Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. And what's the guy they got from the Bulls? Wendell Carter. You know, they have a lot of guys and they don't have a lot of guards. And that's one of their issues. Franz Wagner also isn't shooting very well this year. Yeah, and you and I talked about this last time. The utter irony of the whole thing is the best player the Cavs could trade Darius Garland for is Lauri Markkanen. You know, it almost feels like if they'd have given up Garland in that trade instead of Markkanen, it might have been better for the Cavs in the long term.
Oh my God. This is insane. What the hell are you guys talking about? This is
okay, Chris.
Oh my God.
I spent the last 5 minutes just trolling you and you haven't bitten, and finally you took that lure.
Oh my
God. Okay.
Finally.
Start dragging out some line, buddy.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Is that you guys are talking about these dumbass trades. Oh, we want this. We want that.
Right, but you're the one that asked us to give you names, right, and then you set us up.
Exactly. Exactly. Right now, the Cavs have the second best point differential in the NBA. The problem isn't the personnel. The problem isn't the talent. The problem isn't the roster. The problem is JB Bickerstaff is not maximizing, and he has a consistent problem coaching offense. And that's what the real problem is.
I'm not going to argue with you.
That's what the real discussion needs to be about, is who do we get instead of JB Bickerstaff and his mediocre offense, perpetually mediocre offense, you know, and really take this team to the next level.
Well, you heard my idea today. The absolute best trade target for the Cavs is Monty Williams and the Suns training staff, who are, you know, for years the best in the league.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They prolong Steve Nash's career. Yeah, everybody says Phoenix has the best training staff. So, I don't know. I mean, you've heard that, right, Eli?
Yeah, definitely good training staff.
No, but
in all
seriousness, the proof is in the pudding. Look at Chris Paul. He was able to play more playoff games at an older age than when he was with Houston. Like, he's not missing game sixes and sevens. And, you know, they got to the finals with Chris Paul later in his career. So.
And they were a COVID game away maybe from last year getting to the finals.
Yeah, exactly. So, but to Chris's point, I actually do feel like if the Cavs started Jetty Osman, just to see how it would freaking look, I think that would be a way to possibly improve the team within. I mean, the dude still has the best net rating in the NBA, so I don't get it. Like, why he cannot draw a start for the Cavs under JB's tenure.
Point of order, I'm fine if he doesn't start if he's playing 33 minutes. Like, that's my issue, is not starting or not starting. It's the minutes, because I feel like he absolutely can be the small forward version of Man. The issue is that he just buries him sometimes for no good reason. And maybe it's based on the slumps he's gone through in the past. Maybe it's based on Chetty plays too fast or gets, you know, on both ends of the floor. But I feel like JB would trade Chetty for Kyle Anderson tomorrow so he could eke out an 80 possession game every game. I mean, am I wrong there?
My point is, though, Jetty Osman.
Shut up, Nate. You're stupid.
No. I get your point if he does play 33 minutes. But if you're going to play him 33 minutes, why would you not start him? I mean, what's the point to not start him if you're going to play Lamar Stevens and Isaac Okoro 22 minutes and you're going to play Jetty 33? And I just don't – I get that it's fine if he is playing 33 minutes, but he literally got a DMP like 5 games ago for getting backdoored once.
Well, like, to be fair, they said it was because of his back, but I don't know if that's true, if that's just JB saving face.
Of course it's him saving face, because the next game he played and they won. So
I don't know. I don't know.
Get his ass.
What about you, Chris? What is your response to all that? And then we'll break.
Yeah, I think JB needs to be on thin ice. I think there's where the scrutiny, if you want scrutiny about, you know, how to improve this team, I'm looking at the coaching staff. So, you know, I mean, like, what's plainly obvious right now as it pertains to the Cavs' anemic offensive output lately is the ball's not moving. They're not getting assists, even though we have two of the better passers in the league at guard.
Three. When Rubio comes back, four.
Yeah, there you go. So, and in, you know, going back
and good passing forwards in Love and Mobley.
Yeah, bringing this full circle to tonight, you know, the guys who disappeared really were, and you pointed it out, who had a big game. It was DeAndre Ayton, who shrunk in the game. It was Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. It's really their absence on the boards, in the paint, you know, being decisive. You know, how many times did Mobley get into the paint and into a crowd and then just like turn the ball over or shoot a bad shot or, you know, God knows what happened. It wasn't anything good, you know, and you know, it was just,
You know, I'm going to counterpoint there. He also missed the last two or three games and he's a young guy, needs to get the rhythm, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, but I'm just saying, like, the offense kind of sucks and it's not a new thing with JB. And, like, we have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. The offense should not suck. So it needs to get figured out. And to me, JB is the culprit.
Well, and it's rudimentary at times, too. But yeah.
I actually think it's overly complicated. I think they do overly complicated actions instead of just playing the matchup game. Like just reading the game as it comes, you know.
It's a fair argument. And when we come back, I'm going to play what John Blair Bickerstaff, Devil's Advocate. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Nate Smith, Chris Francis, Elijah Kim, three stalwart Cavs guys talking Cavs basketball. I don't know. I don't know what I got there. But I want to play a little bit of Devil's Advocate for JB because I feel like it goes way back to stuff that Tom Pestek and I have thought about in the past, and that's results-oriented processes versus process-oriented processes, or I don't know if process is the right word, but, you know, one part of me, like, all the time thinks, God, JB Bickerstaff does not know what he's doing. Like, literally in that last Bulls game, I saw a possession where Lamar Stevens was the only guy on the right side of the court for either team. And I'm like, how do you... Like, you don't even have a weak side of the offense. You can't, there's so many guys on the strong side of the offense, you can't even get the ball to the weak side of the offense because no one cares about Lamar Stevens in the corner. But then the other side of me says, you know, Lamar Stevens is a guy that's earned those minutes. And we always talk about sample size. It behooves JB Bickerstaff to play him long enough to say, hey, this is a real sample size. This is not going to work. And, you know, maybe he has to, he seems to me like a guy who has to see it not work in action rather than just trust his gut. Like he has to say, hey, this is not going to work because we sat here and played 500 minutes of it. It doesn't work for that to go through. And sometimes I feel like he knows what he has in Chetty Osman. He knows that his best role is coming off the bench. You know, there is a part of JB Bickerstaff where you could say Chetty's leading the league in net rating. He's kind of using him perfectly. You know, it isn't sometimes when a guy's leading in net rating, it's because the coach is putting him in the position to succeed, you know, and that's part of that discussion too. But the other side of it is things that you and I and watch, and it's completely obvious that this guy shouldn't be playing, and that's Stevens. So sometimes I give him the benefit of the doubt, and sometimes I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? But I will say he's got the biggest, most important thing is he's got his best player playing his best basketball. And he is kind of helping build the habits that they need to win. Now, there are tactical things that drive me up the damned wall, but sometimes I think, hey, those are just growing pains. And I don't know if it's the players that at the end of games just go ISO over and over against bigger players and screw up, or if it's the way the coaching works. I don't know. But I have to admire the way he's handled Donovan Mitchell, the way he's handled Caris LeVert, the way he's handled Chetty Osman. Despite his inconsistency, he's put him in a role that he's been really successful at this year, when the last couple of years he's been very hit or miss and not as successful. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for JB Bickerstaff a little bit, but you know me, I'll always come back and bitch at him the next game. So I don't know. Any response to that, Chris? Because I know you're not enamored of him these days.
I mean, to me, it's, you know, my whole point was that the team's roster is good. The team's roster is elite. We have a championship roster. So if the championship doesn't happen, or something close to it, you know, a conference finals, you know, finals, whatever, like, that's on the coach. We got the personnel to do it. So that's my point. And the team should be getting better. And what we've seen so far is the team's, you know, maintained its elite status on the defensive end, but there's been a precipitous decline of the offense. And it can't be all just Dean Wade's absence, you know. So unless it is, then, you know, my Dean Wade top five, you know, small forward in the NBA agenda is taking off.
What say you, Eli? Is Eli walking his dog again?
You caught me red-handed. What's the
question? Are you really?
I took him out real quick.
There's nothing like a Nate soliloquy for walking your dog for a good 5 minutes.
Yeah. So what's this about JB? We're firing him or what?
Oh my god! You're the
JB or Eli just ignored these two blowhards for the last 8 minutes and is back and is like, so my whole take was I was playing devil's advocate for JB and saying, hey, sometimes you got to go through these things to get better. Sometimes you owe it to a guy like Lamar Stevens to play him for several games. One of my points was that Chetty has a great net rating. Some of that is reflected on the coach putting him in the best position to succeed. I was playing devil's advocate. Basically, Chris was saying, you know, JB needs to be better at offense. Did I paraphrase you correctly there, Chris?
Yes.
Now, are you walking your dog now, Chris?
No, what I was about to look up, I was doing some hot Googling action to, I was looking up, what I wanted to look at was Pythagorean win expectation.
Wow. That's not dog walking conversation.
No, it's not. But what I would say is NBA Stuffer has been tracking our expected win percentage. And right now we are, oh wow, we've actually improved a little bit. So we are finally out of the top five of underachieving teams in the NBA for the season. We're now in the top 10. So we're making improvements. Improvements are happening. We're still below our win expected totals, but, you know.
So, yeah, Eli, is JB what's holding this team back?
I think he is holding it back, but I don't think it's to the magnitude of like the Cavs not being a one seed or, you know, significantly better. I mean, how can you get that much better? The Cavs are like what, the second or third net rating team right now? And
second. Yep.
And I think the counterpoint to that is we can all point to a handful of games that the Cavs should have won if the coaching was better.
I agree. I mean, I think the Clippers and Warriors game just are immediately come to mind. And that being said, there are a couple games that the Cavs definitely won with no help, you know, not because of JV, but like in spite of him.
I actually think his coaching's been really good the last two games. So
I would agree. I think it's great that he rode Donovan Mitchell and Jetty Osmond for 50 minutes and 38 minutes. But I think that's a little frustrating because, especially for Jetty, my thing is, I feel like Jetty Osmond is one of the reasons why JB's getting a bad rap and he's not maximizing the team. And I still don't get it, but at least in the last two games, I think there's a strong correlation of why we think he's doing better and the results speak for themselves. And it's because he's playing the best net rating player 30 plus minutes, as he should be until he comes down. Maybe it's a fluke, but it should, if it's a small, if you're going to say it's a small sample size, maybe you should keep doing it until it's not a small sample size. And
I think the reason why he's so successful to me is simply because he's a better passer than, and just a better understanding of the floor game than Okoro or Stevens.
Well, I would say the other thing
better
about Chetty is he is an absolutely elite transition player. Like he
definitely,
and it's a twofold thing. He's super fast. He has great hands on the outlet, and he is big enough to finish over most people. So usually, like you saw tonight, usually it's not bigs that are back in transition. Usually it's wing players and guards that are back in transition, and Chetty owns those guys in transition going to the bucket. And that is a huge advantage where, you know, kind of the same way LeBron always was, although he's definitely not nearly as impactful as LeBron was. But, you know, I think that matters in a way almost more than he does enough stuff in the half court to keep him playable because of what he does in transition. I don't know.
I think he's just a good basketball player. And freaking
well, it could be that too.
Played him. Should have just freaking played him, but at least he's doing what he's doing. It's fine, whatever, you know. But my thing is you know, going back to Eli making the joke about, you know, the difference between, you know, is JB the difference between us being where we're at, and literally he is. The Pythagorean win expectancy would have us with the top, it would be the second best record in the NBA. Instead, we're at number six. So, I mean, we're talking right now, JB's the difference between the Cavs being a 4 seed or a 1 seed or a 2 seed. So, I mean, I don't know if these things actually going to matter in the playoffs, but I know that good teams care about getting home field, you know, home court advantage in the playoffs. You know, teams that
winning begets winning.
Yeah. Teams that want to win the big things, you know, they're trying to get home court advantage. So, you know, to me, you know, and
okay,
you
Eli go, cut him going off. Back he's to, he's yeah, just droning on.
I'm just saying.
Ironically, though, my counter to that is that actual elite teams don't care about seeding. And I don't think the Cavs are a team that are like that. I don't think they should play like that because they haven't done anything yet in the playoffs.
Well, they're so much better at home.
Yeah, and they are. I mean, like, it just. So, I'm all for trying to maximize wins right now, especially if the team was healthy. And, you know, Garland being out for 9 games definitely doesn't help. But in a weird way, the Cavs are 9-0 when he doesn't start. So, it's just I think JB is the reason the Cavs aren't maximizing their potential, but I don't think it's drastically changing the team. I guess that's my stance, and it's not a very strong stance, I admit, but that's kind of where I'm at right now.
I'm less on the JB thing, and I'm more on the Cavs are still really young, don't know how to close games. They're also trying to develop Evan Mobley, and they're playing two bigs that aren't good shooters outside of the key, and that you're not going to maximize your wins. I mean, you could talk about maximizing wins, but you can't play Kevin Love more than, you know, 22 minutes a night. But if you're just looking at a stat sheet and you look at this guy, Kevin Love, who's putting up massive plus minus numbers, you say, oh, why isn't that guy playing 35 points? Well, it's because he's a million years old and he can't guard anybody and he can only play 22 minutes a night. Like, the stats don't tell all that picture. You know, they don't have all that context. So I will say there's some built-in limitations to what he's doing. And there are times that he has played Garland and he has played Mobley when he probably shouldn't have, down the stretch of games. There's times he's played, and I've seen him over course correct. Like, we saw really early in the season when Toronto was abusing Raul Neto, and then Neto didn't see the floor for 20 games, you know? So it's, he definitely has had his moments where it's like baffling decisions of what he's doing. But I mean, in some respects, it might all just come out in the raw, in the wash.
I mean, my thing is he's young, so there's a chance for improvement. That's what I'm holding on to.
Yeah. Well, look at, who's the coach of Milwaukee?
Budenholzer.
Budenholzer, master of panic. Bud. Like, we didn't think he'd ever win a championship, and he figured it out. Now, we got a lot of really smart players, and that helped. But, you know, sometimes you just got to figure it out. And I don't know. I don't know if he's the guy or not. I don't know if this is the year or not. I don't think it is, just because I don't think they have enough shooting. And I don't think they have enough shooting with size. But I will say that they have, I certainly think they are better long term, and I think they're better in the playoffs with Donovan Mitchell and another big guard long term than Darius Garland. So I don't know. I don't know what to say, what else to say. But we've beaten that horse to death. So we're gonna take a break, and then, you know, maybe when we come back we got a little trade slot. So there we go. Oh wait, did we just take a break? Did we just come back from a break?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. So I'm super confused. But we're going to take another break. Screw it. Welcome back to God's Podcast. Nate Smith, Eli Kim, Chris Francis. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was the kind of comical just whining about the 2-minute report by the Bulls fans of the Kevin or the Donovan Mitchell supposed lane violation. Like, no one's ever calling that lane violation in any game ever, right? Is there a game you've watched in the last 20 years where they would have called that lane violation on with 4 seconds left in the game?
No. No way.
Especially when everybody else was in the lane early anyway, right?
Yeah, they just let every... It's a free-for-all.
Like, right, that's exactly.
Like, no one gives a hell. No one gives a crap what happens.
Yeah, that's kind of my issue with the 2-minute report is, like, you can always say a guy was fouled on a jump shot on the last shot, but it's like, unless a guy is bleeding or it's just completely blatantly obvious, they hardly ever call a foul on the last play, and they're never calling a lane violation. Like, can you imagine? Those refs would have not gotten out of town if they'd have called a lane violation on one of the greatest plays we all have ever seen, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just garbage. And I guess in a way, the Bulls whining has kind of made me feel like, you know, when we whine about officiating and I feel like the Cavs have had enough games taken away from them by officiating that I don't feel bad about something like that happening.
Yeah.
Like, how about that goaltending call in the late against the Coro a few games ago?
Yeah, against the Pacers.
That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen. It was like the ball didn't get over the rim. So, I mean, you can whine about it all you want, but it's, you know, they're never going to change. Like, I almost feel like they should get rid of the 2-minute report. But I guess it keeps the refs accountable a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, what's your take on the 2-minute report, Chris?
I never have read one. I never have cared about one. I've never talked about one. You know, I suppose I shouldn't start now.
What about you, Eli? Any? I'm sure we'll be whining about one in the future, but
I'll be honest. I'm a huge fan of I candidly think refereeing this year, and especially last year too, in the NBA has been really bad. So I'm always complaining about referees. I'll just be.
I know you are, and it's one of my favorite things about you.
But
I love. Remember when he went into the DMs?
Yeah, that guy still.
Did you go into the ref's DMs?
I did. It was
oh my god! Oh my god! You're not gonna name names here, are you?
No, I did. It was.
Yeah, he did. Me. He definitely did.
He blocked me.
Who was it?
It was a referee with the last name Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. I think he's like the first Indian American referee.
Wow. Not only are you a jerk, but you are an exclusionary jerk.
Well, okay. And then I think another point is there are just refs who are just so bad, but they continue to get assigned to these marquee games. And that just makes no sense to me.
I will be agreeing with you there.
Like Tony Brothers should never get a finals game.
Tony Brothers is, I knew you were going to go
crazy.
Well, he was in that Milwaukee game.
Although he did give, Donovan calls. So, I mean, maybe he's in there as a star fixer.
Him and Zach Zarba should never ref in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't stand Zarba.
Because Zarba, I mean, a lot of people probably don't even get into the weeds of this. Zach Zarba broke the playoff record of foul calls, and then he broke his own record three times last year. Like, And then he got a finals game. He wasn't the head referee.
Selfish prick. Seriously. Way to make it about yourself. What the hell is wrong with you, Zach Zarba? Yeah, I'm calling you out.
You're going to slip into his DMs, huh?
That's right.
But that's why, I mean, my whole point is I think refereeing in general has been really bad in the NBA. And the two-minute report just makes them look worse because you can't change it. And
yeah, that's my thing. Who cares? Because that's the whole thing. It's like there's no recourse.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So if there's like a system where like the referees are like, all right, well, Zarba like literally blew this game. He's not going to ref for like 2 weeks. Like if there was a system like that, I think I'd be intrigued personally, but it's not ever going to happen like that. Because like all those things happen in the off season where referees just get quietly let go and no one ever hears from them ever again.
Like, yeah. So. Well, and the crazy thing is like, with as bad as the officiating is, and the and I will say one of the issues now is there's just so many very young refs or officials, and it a lot of them are coming up because so many retired in the last several years, and there's going to be some growing pains there. But I will say the other thing is just like these goofy ass points of emphasis. Like remember that Knicks game where they called like 19 travels. And then, of course, you know, Jared Allen got away with, we even said it in the live thread when the game was going on, that Jared Allen put back late in the game against, who was it? In the Bulls game, he took like five steps. Like, and they called it out in the 2 minute report. And it's like, it's just, yeah, I don't, the 2 minute report doesn't change anything, but it also points to some of the other stuff that's going on in the NBA. Like, I am so sick of the pointless replays. Like, how many times did we see him go to the monitors tonight on, like, why can't they just have a guy in the league office watching the game and say, look at the camera and not have the ref go to the table and look at the stupid monitor? Like, why do they have to do that? It seems like such a colossal waste of time in a game that's already sometimes takes too long. Like, I feel like that game against the Bulls the other night was 3.5 hours. Like, why are we going to replay for the dumbest things. Just make a call on the floor and just be done with it. I mean, I get having a challenge or two, but there's so many things they go to the monitor for that are stupid now. Would you guys agree, or are you just sitting here? Yeah, are sure. you walking your dog again, Eli? I think no, he is.
I'm not.
Oh,
I'm
whatever. Not. And that, okay. But like, some of these reviews are endless. I don't know. But what do you guys think of that? What's the deal with all these reviews? I'm Andy Rooney.
You sound like Hubie Brown.
Thinking about
Hubie Brown. Take this guy we've got right here. He's one of the best players we have in our league today.
No.
Not only does he give you the scoring, but he also gives you the rebounding and 4 assists a night.
The Andy Rooney thing was the actual character. That was the bit. That was the bit. Not Hubie. Come on, Hubie is a treasure.
Oh my God! Shut your mouth. He's the worst.
He's the best.
He was a treasure 15 years ago. Oh, speaking of treasures, have you heard Mike Fratello, Human Valium? Oh my God, he was just droning out like tonight in the late in the game. He literally listed the 3-point shooting percentage of every single member of the other team. Like just sitting there, just in a long soliloquy, it was painful.
It's weird because I thought Fratello was actually pretty good like 2 years ago. But now he's horrible.
I think he's
fine. I think Fratello's fine.
They just need AC there.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
No, he's fine, but he only works in a 3-man booth.
Yep, exactly.
I actually really liked Brad Daugherty a lot more than I thought he would. I would.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like Daugherty a lot. Daugherty might be my favorite now.
He had that story about Donovan Mitchell that was key about that 71-point game. He said that he had given him a pep talk before the game or whatever.
I thought he was fantastic in that game.
Yeah, I mean,
oh yeah,
and Donovan even called him out.
Yeah,
Donovan called him out in the post game presser.
Yep. Yeah. No. Exactly. Because Daugherty came up to him and said, you know. Basically gave him a confidence booster, like, dude, you're that guy, you know what I mean? Quit, don't shy away from it, embrace it, you know, and you just went off and took it. So it was cool.
It was, yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, all the replays. Like, do you guys get sick of them or just, it's just part of the game?
Yeah. They should get rid of them. Sure. I don't care. Yeah,
wow.
They should get rid of them. Yeah,
like the stupid ones.
No, all of them. Get rid of all of them.
Well, like, why can't just somebody in the league office just say, "Hey, this is this," and the guy doesn't have to go flip the monitor around?
It's like, probably gamblers that make that impossible.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's the other thing that's driving me nuts is all the gambling ads now. Like, I feel like we've switched from crypto to Jesse Pinkman trying to sell me on gambling.
Probably so.
Anyway. Okay. So the other thing I want to talk about is, and maybe tonight's not the night to talk about it, but all the scoring this year and how insane the scoring is and how many 50-point games and all these other things we're seeing. Like, there's a lot of theories going around. What are yours?
I mean, for me, it's just players are good. We're in a good
age, you.
I think.
Well, and you know, I feel like players who can't shoot are a rarity now.
Yeah, you stick out like a sore thumb, that's for damn sure.
You want to hear my theory?
No, yeah. Just Chris's.
Players are good, refs are ass. That's why everyone's scoring a lot of points.
Probably true.
It's fair. Like, there were so many damn fouls in that Bulls game.
You know what I'm sick of is, you know, the hardenification of all the guards in the NBA. I'm looking at you,
yeah.
SGA. I'm looking at Luka. I'm looking at Embiid. I'm looking at all these free throw merchants. I'm freaking sick of them.
Ah, DeMar DeRozan.
DeMar DeRozan.
The fall down king.
I'm fine if you use a pump fake, or I'm fine if you use a ball fake, whatever, but the flailing and the you know, woe is me act. Screw that. That is
These guys that fall down just on every three.
Actually, you know another three one? Pointer. Giannis, fraudulent, just runs in. He like that whole team is a bunch of free throw merchants. They're a bunch of ref merchants. Their whole offense is, I'm going to throw my body into the defender and hope I get a call. That's like what half of these guys are doing. You know,
any of you guys watching this Lakers Miami game?
Yeah, I've got another.
Did you see Schroeder's ankle injury? He basically bent it 90 degrees sideways. Like, it just looks brutal. And apparently he's going to play, which is, he's going to shoot his free throws and he'll probably be done. Anyway, no, I'm with you. I think the other thing I read about was the number of take fouls have increased the scoring because teams aren't stopping fast breaks like they were, which is leading to a lot higher percentage shots. Awesome, well, I mean, they said 1,700 plays were take fouls last year. And I have loved that they have instituted that rule because it was garbage that people were just doing take fouls to do take fouls. Now, I haven't seen a couple bad ones, but for the most part, it's been implemented pretty fairly. What was the other one? I think, like you said, the officiating and the free throw shooting, but, and it is a little bit of a bummer because I thought 2 years ago when they started the season and they had way cut down on the fouls, it kind of made for a more exciting basketball, but a lot of the players complained and then they kind of reversed it in season. I want them to find that happy mix, but I don't think they're there yet. Like, I feel like the mix all depends on the ref you get, you know, whether you get, they call everything or nothing. So I don't know. And I think that with the other theory I saw was that teams are getting so much better at making sure their most efficient players take the most efficient shots all the time. And the shots that are kind of in the wheelhouse. And it's just that offensive coaching has gotten so much better. So that could be part of it, too. Anyway, that was the State of the NBA by Nate Smith, Chris Francis, and Eli Kim. And I feel like this is long enough in the tooth that we probably shouldn't get to trade slop tonight because we'll have plenty of other trade slop discussions over the next month. There's a lot of people predicting a lot of blockbusters, and then there's a lot of teams that are in contention and people saying, no one will have, there won't be a lot of trades. So it remains to be seen. But but I did want to get into the Cavs got a big road trip coming up, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So how many games are they out west for? Hot Googling action.
Yeah. Hold on.
So we've got at the Suns, at the Jazz, at the Trailblazers. So we've got and at the Nuggets, we got a 5-game road trip taking us out to mid-January. And then the Pelicans come to town. And then we've got the Grizzlies, and it's kind of a mixed bag after that. But, yeah, I mean, 5-game road trip out west. Some pretty tough teams. I got to hope the Cavs can win at least 3 of those. I would be happy with 2. But because the Cavs haven't been nearly as good on the road, what's your prediction for the road trip there, Chris?
They'll be lucky if they get 2.
Eli?
Yeah, I think 2 would be what I'm expecting. 3 would be ecstatic.
Okay. And here's the big question. Who wins tomorrow, Man versus Nuggets? Do the Nuggets win or does the Man win?
Oof, I feel like the Nuggets are going to win.
they score 130 and the stomach lining bursts, huh?
Well, I just think average out with tonight's game, you just got to go for the over and the Nuggets are going to overwhelm the Man.
Okay, there you go. And you guys got anything to pitch as we wrap up this Long in the Tooth podcast? Chris, Tres Generaciones.
No. Like I said, Trail Bro Dudes, You Know Ball podcast that
nice.
Did the Donovan Mitchell trade.
Nice. So
that's what I'll pitch. You go check it out. Go listen to it. Hear an outsider's perspective on the Donovan Mitchell trade. And like I said, Ainge got fleeced.
Eli, what do you got anything?
Nothing to pitch.
Going to the Rocket Mortgage Fuel House to watch Donovan Mitchell put in 71 points and 11 assists. You'll pitch that for anybody who's interested.
Of course, but I think I'll pitch. My buddy is driving. He's moving away from Ohio for a little bit. I think he said he was going to try to listen in, so I'll pitch it to him. His name's Josh. He's a pilot.
Nice.
Safe travels. Hope to see you soon, brother. Hope this pod was at least a little bit of fun.
Is he flying commercial? Drive. Is he a commercial
pilot? No, he's driving down. He needs to get some
hours. Is he a commercial pilot?
He's trying to get his hours for that.
So, oh, awesome. Well, good luck, man.
Yeah.
That's a hard road to hoe. That's a lot of hours to work.
That's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why he's moving down to get a little bit easier hours, I think.
Is he ex-military?
He is not.
Okay. Yeah. And a lot of those guys are. And so I hope he can get all his hours in and get an awesome job. So.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's been going down there. It's just easier to get his hours. So.
Down in Atlanta area?
No, it's actually out like the Gulf Shore. So.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, in between two Air Force bases. So.
Cool. Well, good luck, Josh.
Yep.
And I'm going to pitch so I feel like Brendan Fraser is kind of like a hot topic right now because everybody's saying he's going to get this Oscar. They're actually talking about another Mummy movie. But I'm going to pitch a terrible show called Doom Patrol, which is a DC show on HBO Max where they're canceling everything. But he is the voice of a very terribly cheap-looking robot on this really goofy superhero show called Doom Patrol that I very much enjoy. I think it's pretty well written. There's been about 4 seasons, and I'm trying to think of Timothy Dalton is in it, who was a 2-time James Bond. And I think... the other main guy you'd know is Brendan Fraser, but he just does voice work in this show. But it's a pretty entertaining show, pretty well written if you like superhero stuff. So check it out. And all obviously Costco brand spiced rum. So that's all I got tonight. And as always, go Cavs. We'll see you for Man versus Nuggets Wednesday.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire. And we're out.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.